I started on the 1st of January 1965. I think the first day was a bit of admin, and the next day I was introduced out to the station, and I was a receiver technician. I was employed as a receiver technician in the RF section. Now, the organisation in the company was, there was a chief engineer, there was section heads of the RF section, the antenna mechanical, and the data. There were a few other, there was support services, there was mechanical services, you know. Anyway, that's sort of the way it was. I was part of the RF section, working as a receiver technician, and the receiver section had a couple of what were called field engineers, Neil McVicker and Jim Clayson were those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a transmitter section. I think that basically was the RF section. The transmitter microwave. Yeah, I should add microwave.
So how many people would you have had in that section?
In that section, receiver techs, there was Jan Volk and myself and Brian Eagledon. So that makes three at least. The two sort of field engineers, McVicker and Clayson. Over the top of them was Keith Brocklesby, who was the RF engineer. Then on the transmitter microwave side of it was John Heath. John Heath was in charge of a field engineer, a guy called Jeff Rose. And underneath him were a couple of guys, Kennedy Cox and Mal Lee. So, you know, that's the sort of... I mean, I could have missed out one here or there.
That's pretty good going.
I think I've got them. Yeah, so that was the RF section. Over the top of the John Heath and the Keith Brocklesby was a guy called Alan Lum. He was the fellow who interviewed me for the job. Now, it wasn't long after I got there that we were having a lot of troubles with the transmitter, apparently. I know the thing wouldn't stay up. It was dropping out because of interlocks with the water system, the coolant system, and in the end, Alan resigned. And don't know all the ins and outs of that, but I know that he left within the space of, a few weeks, several weeks after I started there. So they just left that position. I think they left it on either for Keith Brocklesby to look after, or they left it out completely. So that's sort of the organisation. Anyway. When I first started there, it was a matter of getting to know this S-band receiver system. And that was more or less done by Neil McVicker, and with block diagrams and walking around and that sort of thing, hands-on training.
And this is still well before the opening?
Oh, yes, yeah. The official opening, I've just got a bit of paper here, I can put a date on that. The official opening was March the 19th, 1965, with the Prime Minister, Sir Robert Menzies. The first track that we did officially was in February sometime. I don't have a date.
Mm-hmm.
You might.
I might be able to find one, yeah.
Yeah, you might have that, but I've just got a note on... some photographs that were taken after our first official track with Bob Leslie standing at the ops desk and all of us minions seated around listening to the debriefing. That was after our first official track of Mariner 4.
Okay.
So we had been tracking ad hoc, I think, to get the feel of everything, to see that the systems were working. But I think that was the first official track.
And Mariner 4 was the first spacecraft you tracked?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. So, sorry, I don't have the date of that, but somebody might. We were then committed to track Mariner 4 on the tracking schedule, in addition to, I presume, Woomera 41.
Yep.
You know, in those early days, it was pretty heady stuff to try and just get on top of a new lifestyle, new equipment, new organisation, and so on. So a lot of it was a blur. But we had irregular shifts. There was nothing like the organised shift structure of a year or two later. It was very ad hoc, and the company used to just say, well, we need you guys to work from 8 o'clock at night till 4 next morning. You know, there was all sorts of arguments about penalties, and eventually it came to the point where there was, if you like, some of the older guys that had come out of the PMG, brought unions into the fray.
Right.
It got more organised after we got an award, but that took several months to happen. So we used to just be called in on whatever shift time the operations required. And that was dependent on the tracking schedule coming out of JPL.
Mariner 4 was really used for practice to get things sorted out.
Well, Mariner 4, we had shakedown tracks to get the bugs out of the system, but we were then committed, once we'd got to that point of being committed, and I can't give you a date when we were committed as operational, but I feel that it was sometime in February or perhaps early March, around the official opening time.
Mm-hmm.
But once we were committed, that was it. If we didn't track, there had to be answers as to why we couldn't. I know that in the early days, the transmitter had a lot of troubles with it tripping out. And they actually redesigned the coolant pipes so that as the dish turned, it didn't have great bubbles suddenly appear in the coolant. I know that that was a lot of heartache for the transmitter guys. It was just a design of the way the coolant pipes were organised in that particular dish initially. Mm-hmm. Now, that wasn't my area of responsibility, but I certainly knew the results, because if we were tracking in two-way lock and the transmitter dropped out, well then you suddenly went to one-way downlink.
Yep.
And that happened. I'd say it was the first month or so of our commitment.
I'm aware that Parkes tracked Mariner 4
as
an auxiliary as well.
I didn't know anything about that. They may have been called up for the occultation when Mariner reached Mars and went behind it.
And so you would have been tracking in parallel with Island Lagoon for a while, and then took over the responsibility from...
Somewhere along the line, Island Lagoon would have been committed to Lunar Orbiter. I'm not sure of the sequence between that mission, with a bit of time we could work it out, and Surveyor. But I know that Island Lagoon was relieved of its parallel tracking at some point when they thought we could be trusted. and so they did other things. Yeah, so I was a receiver operator on shift until, you know, the day of the spacecraft arriving in the vicinity of Mars. That was a pretty exciting time that had been built up with, you know, the expectation that we would be perfect, and we didn't want any hitches, and we, in fact, I've got a letter which I wrote to my mother, which is dated Monday the 19th of July 1965. Uh-huh. I'll skip the personal stuff, but I wrote about the about work. I quote, "Also, I guess you heard about the Mariner on the news. On the day of encounter, they had all the press out at the station and had closed-circuit TV to show them what was going on. It was a muck-up right from the start, with people in a panic everywhere, and this made things ever more difficult than they really were. To start with, there were incorrect predictions. Yeah. And so it took me 8 minutes to find the signal after it had come over the horizon. Not that anything was lost, because the station at Goldstone was tracking at that time. Then later, when the thing went behind Mars, the operations chief here had a long discussion with the mission directors to try and get some better predictions for when it came out from behind Mars. Also, during this time, we all had lunch as best we could. I didn't trust time going to a barbecue, so I took sandwiches. Anyway, about 30 seconds before the signal was due to arrive back on Earth, they gave us a new set of predictions, and then there was a scramble to set up the new figures. As I was tuning the receiver, I heard the signal, and we were the first station to make contact after the encounter. Later on in the afternoon, the operations manager asked the two of us operating the receivers to go and have an interview with the press. Anything that you read in the papers need not necessarily have been said. It certainly is a marvellous achievement the Yanks have done." End of quote.
Wow, yeah. It must have been terribly exciting.
It was. Yeah. So that interview ended up perhaps in radio, I wouldn't know. But it ended up in the press of the Sydney Morning Herald, Friday, July the 16th, 1965. There's a front page of that, which you probably have seen.
Is it the one with...
Bob Leslie and Les Whaley in the background, looking at the analog instrumentation systems chart. And then I'm in the picture below that. And it says, the caption says, "Bruce Window of Queensland listens to the first signals being sent back from the spacecraft." Anyway, there's a whole front page of the Sydney Morning Herald allocated to Mariner 4 in Mars puzzle. That was the result of the two of us going off to talk to the press. Now, I did talk to you briefly about when I was tuning that receiver. I sort of heard it, and I locked on, and I think I've mentioned that I recognised that it seemed to be very low signal level in comparison to what it should be, and I assumed that I had locked onto a sideband. And so I retuned the receiver to where I thought the carrier was and locked that on. But in the meantime, Bob Leslie was telling me, no, don't. It's too late, Bob. It's all happened. and I did mention, I think, that the telemetry guys, Rudy Langeveld, had kept his demodulator in lock artificially all that time it was behind Mars. And when I said I had a signal, he threw across to the receiver, and it was all garbage because the receiver was locked on a sideband. So it was just a bit of bad luck. But we were minutes and minutes and minutes ahead of Goldstone in getting this spacecraft after it had gone behind Mars. And what happened, of course, is the uplink was lost when it went behind Mars, so the spacecraft switched to its auxiliary oscillator, which was at a different frequency. That's why we had to look for it with those expected predictions that they gave us, which, were all based on what they thought the temperature might have done and this and that and the other. And I really don't know the detail of how off the predictions it actually was, but it got acquired fairly quickly, and that was all I was concerned about.
Mm. The images of the Martian surface that it took on the way past, they came back fairly slowly, didn't they?
Yeah, they came back at 8 1/3 bits per second.
So that would have taken quite a while.
Yeah, it took weeks.
Did you see those there at TED, or were
No, what we had was decommutated data about each of the bits, and some of us spent some time trying to compose a picture based on, a 64-bit scale of darkness and where you thought the bit appeared in the picture. Gave it away as a hopeless job to do manually. But it took weeks to get that data back at 8 1/3 bits.
Yeah.
And, we tracked Mariner on, and I really don't recall what happened, whether it just died or whether it got left to a lesser and lesser tracking period. I know that we were gearing up for Surveyor, which was to be launched in 1966.